Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Thanks for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse ML Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined by Kyle Devitt. It is a whole new world out there, Kyle, both from an MLL and MLL Inside Lacrosse Podcast perspective. As always, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
It's been a couple weeks hiatus, and if I were better at my the guy from, not Steve Carell, but the new guy, Andy from The Office, his scene in The Hangover, the first one when he sings "We Are Back," I would do that right now. But my impersonation of him is not very good.
That's too bad. I would enjoy Terry Ford karaoke.
Do you feel like my not knowing who the name of the actor that I'm talking about falls with the guys of Unprepared?
It's Ed Helms.
Yes, that's who it is. I should have just asked you because you know a lot more about that type of stuff than I do.
Yeah, I'm weird. Film minor.
Well, from New Hampshire too, which I'm sure helps.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some of the things that are different than 3 weeks ago, the last time I recorded this show. First of all, the ML All-Star Game has occurred. You have traversed the East Coast to and fro, heading down to Florida, so we'll have to hit on that. And also, we have a week of exciting results, both shaking up the standings a little bit and, you know, also a little bit of controversy. Seems like a legit professional sports league we're talking about today, does it not, Kyle?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a change for the better, I feel. There's controversy, there's great goals, they're on SportsCenter, not a lot of other sports are doing anything. It's great. It's a spotlight. And hopefully, you know, the teams keep bringing good games, good results.
You mentioned something that I want to hit on real quick before we get going, and that is the fact that everybody talks about the Wednesday after the Major League Baseball All-Star Game as being the dead time in professional sports. Nothing's going on. There's no sports on TV. That's why they run the ESPYs. Do you feel like it would be smart for Major League Lacrosse to schedule games for that Wednesday going forward to take advantage of what is a dead period for the rest of professional sports?
I mean, it would fall in line with their July 4th date this year, because the 4th of July fell on a Wednesday and they had a game then. It was Ohio versus Denver last week. So it might work out. I think it depends on what day it falls on and, you know, what day the All-Star game is played.
Well, that's always a Wednesday.
Baseball. Yeah.
It's always, the baseball game's always played on Tuesday, and then the Wednesday is always the dead day.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know anything about baseball, man. I just know the Red Sox. That's all we do over here. But it's definitely an opening that they could take advantage of. They are playing another Friday game. I mean, that's probably as close as it gets with them. I don't think that they take into account scheduling of other sports that much when they put together their schedules. I feel like they just go after their target audience and hope they get them. I mean, if you look at the TV schedule for this weekend, there's really only one game on. There's no games on CBS Sports Network this weekend, and there's like a syndicated game. The Cannons are playing on CSN, which is a local network up here. But I don't really see – there's no ESPN2 game. So, I mean, they really should have better TV for this weekend. I don't really know why they don't have that. But, you know, playing in during the week maybe opens that up and something to look at.
Yeah, it looks like the Cannons are hosting a Thursday game in 2 weeks. Well, actually, I guess a week from today. So, you know, two season weekends. There's very little professional sports going on tonight as the, you know, Major League Baseball teams don't get back into action until tomorrow. So they have a Wednesday-Thursday window there that I think they could take advantage of. But that's just a free idea that Dave Gross and the other MLL minions can consider among themselves.
Let's hope. Let's hope Dave listens. I hope he does.
Well, let's
happy birthday. Too late, but happy birthday. Happy trade deadline. Happy birthday. Not a coincidence. Just saying.
Let's start there. The trade deadline, Major League Lacrosse trade deadline, pretty active. I will say probably not as active as in 2011, where, you know, I thought that there was a little bit more going on. But what were your takeaways from the trade deadline earlier this week?
I mean, it kind of looks like, you know, Denver made the big splash getting Anthony Kelly. It's a big get for them. They've had faceoff problems all year. They're around, like, the only team that's worse, I think, is the Hounds on the year, and they might actually not be worse now. Although I believe it's Cooney went 7 for 28 this past weekend. But, you know, getting Anthony Kelly in Denver is a good move, and they didn't really overpay for him. He's going to get them in a better space. You know, more possessions for Denver means more goals for Denver, and Denver already is winning the majority of their games. So, you know, I'm sure a bunch of teams are a little upset with Ohio for making that trade, but it's going to work out for them. And, you know, they also added Danny Cacci, who, you know, returns to one of his mentors and Tony Seaman. So, you know, he's a nice piece for a swingman, defender, short stick, or long pole. He gives them another piece, and that's really just kind of dangerous. Denver really came out on top, I think, out of all the teams.
Well, and that's, you know, I guess it would be, looking at the standings, foolish to say that's been a theme for the season, but, you know, more often than not over the last 2 years, it's felt like that, you know, whether it be through the expansion draft or certainly obviously looking back to last year's Steinfeld Cup, presentation. But, yeah, so we've touched on some of the more recent stuff. Kyle, let's take a jump back to the All-Star game. You went down there, you were on the field for the skills competition, you did tons of interviews when you were down there, got some great content for InsideLacrosse.com. Now is your opportunity to talk about what it was like, what was going on inside the mind of Kyle Devitt, MLL cover extraordinaire, in what you and I have already discussed as the highlighted media opportunity of the season.
It was pretty great, and I'm very thankful for it. The thing that was strange to me, I think, was, you know, I stayed in the same hotel as all the players and stuff, and, you know, you'd be sitting down eating breakfast, and, like, Adam Gittleman come down with his mom and eating his eggs and potatoes one table away, and you're like, what's up, dude? And he's like, hey, I can't talk right now, I just didn't have coffee yet. You know, like, it's pretty cool. Like, that was a cool experience, and it wasn't just me that was down there. There was a lot of fans staying at the hotel, so they got the same experience, and that's kind of what I wrote for that pre-All-Star game piece, kind of like the little love fest, you know, butter everybody up. It was nice. Like, I actually really felt a sense of camaraderie with, you know, the players and the fans, which is something that you're not going to get with other professional leagues. And I really think it was just a breathtaking experience. As far as on the field, you know, the stadiums, we don't have stadiums like that up here. You know, all the stadiums.
It was an awesome stadium, or is an awesome stadium.
Yeah. I mean, I've never seen anything like it before. It's very modern. You know, up here, everything's like stone. Like, I'm used to going to like Harvard or like BC, and those are like, you know, giant stone buildings that you feel like cavemen played in. You know, it's very strange to be in a modern stadium that big, that exciting. You know, the crowd was great, and I know that there was a lot of technical issues with the game or whatever, that we don't really have to get into unless you want to. But, you know, being there in person was an amazing experience, and I can't even imagine what it was like for all those little kids down there getting to meet their heroes and, you know, like just slapping high fives and like being like, what's up, man? And the guys were all great responding to all the fans. And, you know, there was no negative stories at all coming out of there. It was all love. It was all gravy. It was a pretty awesome experience.
Yeah, smiles and high fives for sure. One of the things about the All-Star game that's always really interesting to me is that, you know, the MLL is almost, you know, it almost seems like a bunch of All-Star teams, college All-Star teams playing against each other, in some capacity. The MLL All-Star game obviously takes that to the next level. What was your sense for the quality of play in comparison to any other lacrosse game that you've ever seen?
I mean, with the format that was there, the young guns versus the old school, it was definitely something that you could tell that the young guns were ready to just run the whole game. And the old guys were like, wait a second, settle down, little pup, settle down, you know, and they worked for their spots and they moved the ball around a little bit more. So it really was kind of like watching older guys play against like really excited young guys, at least for the first half. The second half, they kind of settled into a more regular MLL tempo. Although I think they kind of went a little far with some of the passing was a little out of control, but you know, at least they're trying stuff. That's the time to try All-Star game practice, whatever. It's, you know, it was all for entertainment's sake, and, I enjoyed it. I mean, is it the best All-Star game I've ever seen? I don't know. Probably not, but it definitely wasn't the worst. So, you know, I think the quality of play is almost irrelevant at a certain point, when it's more about growing the league and growing, you know, the profile, than it is kind of having fundamentally sound lacrosse. You know, it was just more entertainment value.
Well, it certainly didn't get any more entertaining than at halftime. The halftime, you know, competitions obviously are one of the more memorable experiences from year to year for fans and viewers. What was your takeaway? What was your probably strongest memory from the halftime performances?
It was funny being there and then going on the internet and reading what people were saying about what they were seeing on TV. And it didn't really translate, I guess. People kind of hated it from, you know, the majority of people that saw it on TV didn't enjoy how it was portrayed. And that didn't make any sense to me because I was standing right there and it looked like everyone was having fun and, you know, everything seemed to be well paced. And I, you know, except for the radar gun not working, which when has the radar gun worked? I feel like people are forgetting this. The radar gun never works. I just like, I don't understand. Like, have you used a radar gun? They don't work. Like, come on, it happens. I think it was a little more pronounced, obviously, this time. It didn't work at all for the last couple shots. But, you know, it was another great experience. You know, it almost got ran over by Gittleman again, you know, barreling through the net and knocking Queener over and knocking the entire net over. And, you know, guys were, like, playing around and stuff, bouncing balls, trying to hit me with the balls as people were, you know, I was trying to do stuff on camera. So that was fun. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. But yeah, it was great. It was a fun time. And, you know, I really feel like there's a little too much negativity coming out of that. And if anybody's dishing out negativity, it's usually me, but you know, I liked it. I thought it was fun. It was awesome. It was great to be around.
Haters gonna hate. And, yeah, you're familiar with that. So, great recap of the ML All-Star game. You know, it's now almost 2 weeks into the rearview mirror, so let's move on to some of the more fresh content. Correct me if I'm wrong. There were two dramatic takeaways from this past weekend's games. We had a five spot, if you will, as Long Island and Rochester ran it back with the uncommon but common Friday-Saturday doubleheader. First, we had 30,000 fans in Denver to watch the Outlaws take on and dispatch the Ohio Machine 17-13. Rochester getting that sweep in that doubleheader, real significant. And then Charlotte moving, separating themselves from the cellar and, getting a step closer to playoff contention with, a surprising upset, handing Chesapeake their second loss, the one goal win in Charlotte. I think that, you know, that Charlotte win, that Chesapeake loss, that whole situation dynamic, and then, the Rochester sweep, the two biggest storylines coming away from the weekend. Let's start with Rochester. What do you take away from what they were able to do in jumping ahead of the Lizards?
Oh, I think Rochester just jumped all over them. You know, it was kind of like the first game, especially the Lizards were very, very lethargic, very lackadaisical in their approach. And, you know, it definitely did not look like a team that had been on a 5-game win streak. It didn't look like that. It just looked like bunch of dudes playing lacrosse, and that's not acceptable. You know, if you look at the whole weekend as far as Lizards versus Rattlers, you know, the Rattlers attack really showed up. Stephen Boyle, Ned Crotty, the sealer for that first game was Crotty with no time in the shot clock winging a ball in, and Stephen Boyle just catching and finishing with three guys draped on him, you know, just sealed that game. And it was the last goal that was scored, and it was one of the best goals of the game, if not the weekend. And that was really, you know, emblematic of the entire conflict between the two teams. Like, the Lizards would go on, you know, a couple goals, and they just couldn't get it going, especially their attack was woeful. They did not put up points. Ryan Young, 3 points total on the weekend, both games put together. Matt Gibson, 3 points total, both games put together. You know, Palaszczuk got 4 points, but, you know, he didn't really shine until the second game. There was a lot of, you know, not spirited play, you know, and the Rattlers will take advantage of you. If you don't bring your hard hat, they will smash you. And that's really what they're good at. They're good at coming at you 100% the whole time. And maybe they're not good enough to beat you all the time, but if you let up, they will run you over. And that's really what happened in both games.
And then finally, you know, in kind of the I guess last, I guess it's significant insofar as what it tipped off in this weekend's, this week's controversy, but, you know, Boston taking care of business against Hamilton, you know, dropping Hamilton, down to even further in the loss column. What do you take away from what you saw out of that matchup, both with the Cannons, you know, kind of getting back to within a game of Chesapeake for tops in the MLL, and then Hamilton slipping to 2-6.
Well, I think one of the things that I took away from watching that game was that Kevin Buchanan is really an elite Dodger, and he might be one of the best in the MLL, maybe the best right now, just beating his guy up top from the wing and just penetrating inside and making plays, you know. And it's funny that something like that would step out when you have someone like Ari Sussman putting up 5 goals, you know, Hamilton just not getting it done on offense. That was the thing that stood out to me. I think Kevin Buchanan's play was excellent that whole game, just breaking guys down, giving the Cannons what they needed. Obviously, Rabel did a great job. And I'd like to congratulate Martin Cahill, who is now 1-for-38 on the season, but 1-for-8 as a member of the Cannons. So Cannons Nation, you know, Martin Cahill coming up. And, you know, Hamilton, you know, tough luck. That's what happens. If you don't treat the beginning of the season early, I have no beginning of the season with any respect and not having a real team out there, then you deserve to lose. You deserve to miss the playoffs. And, you know, I'm almost glad. Maybe they'll change it. I don't know. But this is that's what happens. You paid the price for having all your entire team be NLL guys. Enjoy it. Now you're going to sit and watch everyone else make the playoffs. And you could have done it. They have the talent to have made the playoffs, and now they won't.
It's crazy. It seems like, it probably was 3 weeks ago that we talked about how Hamilton was priming themselves for a position to put themselves into a position for a playoff run. Here they are, you know, what did you see kind of, why haven't they been able to rebound in a more substantial way? And also, what do you make of Reggie Thorpe's comments, in the MLL press conference, conference call yesterday?
I think blaming the refs is, you know, that's a way to go, I'm sure. It's not really – I mean, have I seen it? Yeah, a couple times. Has it cost them games solely because of it? No. Come on, no. And I'm sure he knew that. And, you know, I think he kind of entered the press conference a little angry. And when you do that and you're a coach and someone goads you on or eggs you on, then you're going to go off. It's going to happen. You know, and, you know, I hope that, you know, Quint and Reggie aren't really mad at each other. Maybe they are, maybe they aren't. I don't know. But they're both pros. They'll work it out. It's not the worst thing in the world that happened. People that were on the call seriously enjoyed it. It was great to see both guys kind of let loose a little bit, but you know, there's a price to be paid there with, you know, in regards of this is what you said. You realize that this is what you said in a public forum. Like, you have to realize that people are going to react to it. And, you know, the reaction is definitely, you know, not positive on you know, Thorpe's side. I mean, he made points, but you can't blame the refs for your team losing games, man. Like, that's not the way to go. And he should stick up for his team in regards to his other comments, but I couldn't get on board with that. I couldn't get on board with it. So, kind of where I stand.
All right. Well, and then, you know, just quickly about the state of the Nationals, where they're at, and why they weren't able to do what they've done in the past.
I mean, it's too late. It's too late. Why should they? You know what I mean? Like,
well, no. But it wasn't necessarily too late 2 games ago.
No, it wasn't. But they put themselves in a hole. And when you put
yourself
in a hole,
yeah, I know. I'm asking why weren't they playing well enough to beat Boston on?
Why weren't they playing? I mean, they go as Powell goes, you know, and Powell hasn't played consistently, you know, physically being there. When he's there, he has kind of a calming effect and runs the offense really well. Walters does it as well, but Walters can't really do it by himself because his instinct when he has the ball is to sweep left, go to the cage, and score. And people have started to prevent that, and he's turned into more of a feeder. But when you take him out of the equation running from, you know, the top side of the goal, and you put him on kind of like below GLE and underneath, he's not really the kind of guy that can get around that anymore. You know, he's a lefty that, you know, likes to come in, you know, and go east, west, west, east, and score goals and set things up for other players. And when other players just are happy to score their goals and really don't care about winning, like, I feel like that's what I see when I see Hamilton now. They're just, yeah, nice goal. All right. You know, they're just very calm and even tempered. And like, if you compare a team like Hamilton to a team like Charlotte, who is up
Or a team like Maryland on their run to the national championship.
Yeah, they're just up all the time. They're so psyched and ready to play, and they might get outplayed and lose, but they don't let teams just roll over them. You know, they get, you know, hyped up and they go crazy from the opening whistle, and sometimes that's not good. But I feel like that's so much better than not really, you know, being like, all right, let's play. We lost again. You know, I just feel like there's not a lot of people that care that much as far as results go, and it's more about numbers. There's not a lot of hard work on Hamilton. I mean, one of the things that I said in my column this week was that, you know, they have all the – I've always respected Hamilton's talent. I feel like, you know, to borrow my own phrase, they have top-drawer talent and sock-drawer work ethic. I just feel like nobody's working hard between the two-point lines, between GLE, to get those ground balls besides Brody Merrill and Matt Delente. And, you know, when that's the case, you will lose in the MLL. You can't play a highlight style and win. It's not going to be consistent enough to win games.
Pretty strong and dramatic words. Well, that's what you get paid for, Kyle Dowitz. So let's shift gears here a little bit. It's hard to believe we've made it all the way around the league in having a player from every team on the podcast so far, with the notable exception of the Charlotte Hounds. We're going to rectify that now and bring in Charlotte Hounds midfielder Jovan Miller. We've got a couple of good fireballs ready for him. And yeah, let's go ahead and bring in Jovan Miller.
Jovi Nation.
And now we welcome in Charlotte Hound midfielder Jovan Miller, who in recent weeks has increased his scoring ways as the Hounds have made a mid-season resurgence or insurgence, most notably this past weekend, scoring a 13-12 upset over league-leading Chesapeake Bay Hawks in Charlotte. Joey, thank you very much for joining us. And I guess first things first, what was it like to get that win over the Bay Hawks, who have the best record in the league coming in?
Honestly, a whole lot of things came to my mind. But I have to say one thing was our resiliency. Very relieving. I think that we're at that cusp of, especially when you're 2-6. You're pretty much you're on the outside looking in as far as a championship weekend. So I think that, you know, any good momentum we can have going forward is obviously positive. And the fact that we beat a team like that and now we're still in the hunt, I think it's our optimism is just, it continues to rise.
Hey, Jovan, I mean, after this weekend, we know you enjoy employing your creativity on offense with the air gate. Do you enjoy playing defense? Is that something that you take pride in because you're kind of a two-way midfielder?
Honestly, with how Coach Serino runs it, I talked to him before the season started, and I thought I was going to get my just due as far as playing defense. Well, one thing is that, you know, even when I was in high school going into college, I mean, a lot of people talk about my athleticism, so more than likely the easiest way to put an athlete up is to put him on defense. But it's really helped me, honestly, on the offensive end, just because I think I can get my feet wet playing from the defensive end and going into my offense. So most of the time, especially when, you know, we got a hot goalie in Gattelman right now, anytime he makes a save and he finds me, especially in transition, if I'm good enough to continue to play, coach will just let me stay out there and play offense. So, I do enjoy playing defense, but of course I feel like not every coach should be listening, because I don't feel like being designated as just playing defensive midi again, because every time that seems to happen.
Yeah, there's no doubt that you, well, and not only that, but I mean, your game is well suited for this league. I feel like, you know, either middies come into this league either having to, you know, being offensive middies having to learn how to play defense, or being defensive middies that are just showing that they knew how to play offense. There really isn't a whole lot of room for guys outside of that in this league. But, Joe, I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about Charlotte. You recently, you moved down there, right? Is that, do I understand that correctly?
Yes, sir.
So, yeah, I mean, this is unbelievable. There was a little bit of skepticism, I think, about, you know, the success that Charlotte and Ohio were going to have as kind of expansion locations. I got a chance to watch the game from last weekend. I was stunned by the crowd. I think the stadium is awesome. And from all accounts, you know, this franchise is going, you know, like full guns blazing straight ahead. What's your impression been like of the lacrosse scene in Charlotte?
Well, to be honest with you, I mean, the crowd that you saw from Chesapeake, that's actually one of our worst crowds. We've actually had roughly 6,000 at almost every game. So, I mean, I think that overall the publicity that we receive, especially from Our staff has just been awesome. Wade Leapheart does a great job of promoting our team. And we get to go around and, you know, see some kids and, you know, just get our name out there. Flanagan again lives out here as well. So it really helps the community as well as getting to know us as, you know, human beings. And then on top of that, they come out and they get to see us play. But I think we're causing a stir around here in a good way. And I think that, you know, the more we continue to win, I think it's just more and more exposure we're going to receive. I think our crowd will continue to grow as well.
Hey, shout out to my boy Wade there. You enjoyed a successful collegiate career. I mean, you won the majority of your games at Syracuse. That kind of team success hasn't really translated for you in the MLL. What's it like going from winning most of your games to kind of losing most of your games? Has it taken a toll on you at all?
Honestly, that's a great question. I mean, you know, one of the big examples I used, like when I first came in, especially after my first season, was, you know, we only lost, I'm doing me, Galloway, and Joel, and all my boys. We only, you know, we lost 8 games in our whole career. We come in here and we go 2-10 in our first year at Rochester. That was a little bit, it's obviously a humbling experience, and especially now that, you know, we've been kind of dispersed and Keel plays in Hamilton and I play here in Charlotte. So, honestly, I mean, going into it, you can't really think about it like that because, you know, when you get down a few goals, obviously, I mean, I think 2009 against Cornell is a very good indication that, you know, the game's not over till it's over. So I think you keep that in mind. Unfortunately, it has been kind of a really tough learning curve for me as far as, you know, the tough losses, the close losses. But I think in time, I think things will start to turn around. There's nothing wrong with it. Just being patient with it and just taking it in stride.
Jovan, this question comes from Baltimore City jury duty, where Steven Berger is currently waiting to hopefully not get picked. He wants to know whether or not you prefer playing with some of your old Syracuse teammates or a guy from a little D3 school in Western or in the Eastern Shore, Maryland.
I have to say I'd go with the Eastern Shore guy, and the reason why I say that is because no offense to my boy Amadon, but you know, I've never liked Lafayette. And I'm not going to insult my boy Jeremy Thompson, but they both went to Lafayette. So, honestly, it's a little bit different. Our chemistry, I think that it's hard to find somebody with more energy than me. And the fact that I found, you know, me and Burke are on the same team, I mean, he really exudes way more energy than I do. So I think that's been a very great combination. And I have to go to D3, man.
Hey, Jovan, I had a nice little technical question, but I'm going to skip it because I got a great question from Twitter. At BWater6 wants to know, and so do I, why do you love McDonald's so much? Why?
You know what, man? I hope my parents aren't listening, but, you know, I've been eating McDonald's since I was like 3. So, honestly, I think it just came from that. It's one of those things we eat. You eat it for so long, you expect them to get tired of it. And then they have all these deals. And then, you know, you get the dollar menu and extra value menu. And then now they have sweet teas. And, I mean, it's hard not to like McDonald's. So, to be honest with you, I wouldn't eat it as much if I wasn't in really good shape. I think that it kind of gives me an excuse to, you know, like, eat it a lot because I'm like, well, at least I'm going to burn it off because I have to still train and everything for the upcoming games and stuff. But I think it started at a young age when I was like 3, and it just kind of never let it down, you know.
Jovan, I was going to let you get out on that one, but I just realized that we started this podcast off with I got to apologize. I think I let you down a little bit. I was really struggling to come up with Ed Helms' name as I dropped a Hangover reference. And, you know, anybody that follows you on Twitter knows that for a long time you were big into The Office. I think most people think that The Office has gone downhill a little bit. This is another preference question coming at you. What are you still on The Office train, or have you jumped off that? And if so, what bandwagon are you on right now?
I'm not going to say I jumped off The Office because, I mean, it's The Office. It's the best thing ever, and especially because I have a 3.5-hour flight to Denver tomorrow from Charlotte, you know, from here in Charlotte, so I will be watching The Office the whole time. I think that it dulled because the storylines. I think, like, in the beginning, is like, all the storylines lead up, they build up. And the fact that, like, now that Jim is married, well, at this case, he's married to Pam, and they have two children and stuff. And then everybody was waiting for a new boss, and then Andy Bernard was it, and that was a terrible decision to have him as the boss. And I loved it when they had Will Ferrell for the few episodes because it was hilarious. It died out on me, but I still am a diehard fan. I mean, we can go episode for episode, and I can tell you exactly what happened. But I'm on the Dexter train now. I know it's completely in the opposite direction because it's not funny. It's actually very serious. But I've watched 5 seasons of Dexter, and I'm actually going on my 6th.
Wow. Left field. I like that one. That's a good pick.
Yeah.
There it is. All right, well, Joe Von Miller, we will move on with that one. Hey, buddy, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast. You killed it. Great job. Good luck out in Denver this week. And, you know, we'll see what happens. If we get a championship, we got a podcast going. We might bring everybody that qualifies back. You know, hopefully that includes the Hounds, all right?
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. God bless.
Keep those socks and shoes matching, man. Keep that matching.
Will do. All
right. Kyle Devitt, great stuff there from Joe Von Miller.
Hey, he's a great interview. You know, he kind of stood me up this weekend when I co-hosted Lacrosse Talk with Dan Matthews out of Denver. But, you know, he came back. He brought us some gold. Gave us some gold. You got to admire the spirit of the Joe Von Miller.
I thought you were going to call him out for that.
No, I mean, I kind of just did, but not really.
You can't get mad at it.
I can't get mad at it. I can get mad at a lot of people. I can't get mad at Joe Von. Sorry. Can't do it.
All right, well, he just brought one up. You know, we've got Hounds Outlaws we're looking ahead to this weekend. We've got a couple other games on the docket. What are you most looking forward to?
I mean, that's definitely a great contest. We're going to find out if, you know, the Hounds' victory was over Bayhawks was legit or if the Bayhawks dropped one. I mean, you know, you have Ohio Hamilton doing their little home at home dance.
If either team sweeps that, you think that they are actually in playoff contention, or it doesn't matter? Because to me, if they split, then they almost both eliminate themselves.
Right. I think if Hamilton, you know, as you know, we just kind of went over reasons why Hamilton won't do it and won't make the playoffs. But if Hamilton manages to win both those games, that's a two game swing in the standings as well as their own record. And, you know, we saw what that did for Rochester. And we'll see what it does for Rochester this weekend as well. Will playing two games back to back take a toll on you the next week? We'll find out in Rochester and, you know, Ohio Hamilton, those, you know, as low as that game is on the docket at both games of, you know, record wise, both teams, it's going to be very important to the overall, you know, playoff picture. If they split, like you said, they are both out. They're done. I mean, if Ohio loses, they're definitely done. I know that, logistically and numerically, but, Hamilton, you know, still has like 10% chance or something if they split, but like we went over before, I don't think it's going to happen.
Right. And then lastly, Boston heads to Long Island, Chesapeake heads to Rochester. If you were only able to see one of those games, which we went over at the top, you probably are only able to see one of those games, but if you actually could see both of them, but you had to choose between one or the other, which would you choose to watch and why?
I mean, everyone's going to say Homer, but, you know, I'd go Boston, Long Island just because there's a history. And then those teams are kind of fun to watch. Like, there's a big conflict of styles, whereas, like, Chesapeake and Rochester, I mean, like I've said before, I've seen every game, but like Chesapeake Rochester sometimes has a little bit of animosity. I don't know if you remember last year, Garrity with the clear, I think it was a mid-August game. Garrity had a clear and hit Crotty right in the neck, and it looked like Crotty was dead for like 5 seconds. That was like a big play. And then, you know, we go on the conference call the next week, and he's like, Kelly was like, yeah, no, I didn't think it was deliberate. You know, it's stuff like that comes out of that game. So that's kind of a good game to watch. It's hard. I'd say a push, but, you know, I'm going to watch Boston, Long Island. I mean, I'm going to watch them all, but I'm going to watch Boston, Long Island first, for sure.
All right, well, Kyle Devitt, that'll do it for this week's MLL Inside Lacrosse podcast. Thank you for joining us, as always. Thank you to Joe Von Miller for joining us as well. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Hope we were a little bit better prepared. Apologize for not knowing Ed Helms' name at the top. Won't let that one happen again. We look forward to having you again back next week.
Thank you very much, and congratulations, Mr. Foy, on your pending nuptials.
Ah, thank you very much. You outed me.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
I need to.
Yeah, so I'm about to get hitched. Hope all the listeners can enjoy that one. I will, and by about, I mean like in a year and a half, but you know, as of recently, that's new. So yeah, there it is.
That's why we missed the podcast last week. You forgot to say that. It's okay.
No one
blames you. We still love you. It's okay.
All right, Kyle.
You're going to edit that out. But it's okay.
Inside the Cross Podcast.